At Federal, we have products for every season and every pursuit. Our passionate and dedicated teams design, build, and deliver the world's best American-made ammunition, whether you're hunting, target shooting, or defending yourself and family. Our pride and hard work can be found in every box, ammo can, or bottle of ammunition. For us, it's always in season. It's Federal season.
Welcome to Federal Ammunition's podcast, It's Federal Season. I'm Jason Nash, VP of Marketing, along with our Director of Media, Brian Kelvington.
Hey, Jason. We have a special podcast today, and joining us are two of the hottest stars on outdoors television today.
Yeah, we're really excited to have Lee and Tiffany Lukoski join us from the Outdoor Channel show Crush with Lee and Tiffany. Lee and Tiffany, glad you can make it today, and thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, great. Thanks for having us. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So before we dive into kind of what makes your show so successful, you guys have got a great story of how you met, how you got started, and the journey that you've been on. Can you give us a brief history? Just because not all of our listeners have heard the whole backstory of Lee and Tiffany.
Well, how we met, I mean, we both grew up in the same town, and Tiffany hung out with one of my sisters. So, I knew her probably most of my life, but she's 7 years younger than me. So, like, you're in high school and stuff. They're just little kids at that time, you'd think, And then when we got to college age, we kind of overlapped in college, and we started hanging out and doing stuff, together at that time.
I know, it is funny because we really did like know each other from when I was very young. Actually, one of his sisters used to be at the Princess of Columbia Heights, and one of his sisters was my chaperone. So I would overlap Lee here or there, but he 1000% ignored me for many, many, many years. And then we just happened to overlap a little bit in college when he was tutoring there, and I was just starting, and kind of just started dating from there. And then I don't know how it actually came into, like, we were actually, like, really, really serious, but I guess we just started going on trips and stuff together.
I think it was when we were out shed hunting every day. Yeah, shed hunting. And you weren't getting too bored of it right away. And about 2 years of 100% hunting and, not much else for dates other than going, hey, let's go and shed hunt. She was a flight attendant, so it was like, hey, we can fly for free. Let's, I heard there's some good deer down by the Republican River down in the bottom corner of Nebraska. Let's fly into Denver, and we'll rent a car, and we'll go look all along the Cimarron, all that eastern side. Okay, that'd be great. Let's go do it. And it's like, after a couple of years of that, I say, hey, this is probably the right girl for me, because, not too many people put up with 24/7, 365, deer on my brain about 99.9% of the time. So I think it started there. And then, when the TV show part, basically.
Can I interrupt there? I'm still laughing. I'm like, for the record, I don't think we've still been on a date. Just like not too long ago, I was like, seriously, can we go do something other than as much as I love the farms deer and everything, but I'm like, can we go just like do something? He's like, well, what would you want to do? I'm like, I guess I really don't know, but something. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, anything that you're like, hey, Tiff, what would you actually like to do today? But
a movie, a show,
just like anything. But in all reality, most of the time, I'm still like, oh, let's just go shed hunt, or let's go, drive around or something. It's like we have like a paradise that we built down here, and it's just, I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And, and as far as the show, it just kind of fell into our laps. We never really even tried to. I mean, I worked at an archery shop all through high school and college and stuff, and Tiffany would come up there and shoot, and we got to know a lot of the different reps and stuff from all the different bow companies and stuff through that. So through that, we went to the ATA show and stuff, and then we met like Michael Waddell and Don and Candy Kiske and the Drurys, and we're all kind of around the same age, so we all started hanging out. And back in those days, Waddell and Jay Gregory and some of them, even Michael was just a camera guy, so we would all just hang out and stuff. And
then we worked the shows together for many years.
For Real Tree.
Just like worked in people's booths.
Yeah, and just for fun, And then we were always shooting good deer. I always had deer in my brain you know, 90% of my life. And, you know, just David Blanton was like, hey, you know, you ever think about filming stuff? And we're like, well, not really, but I mean, we could certainly try. So Tiffany and I just, we bought a camera and went out, and man, that first year we even started filming anything. I mean, we had one of the best years of our lives. I shot like a 196 and a 170 and a 160 something. And that, you know, believe it or not, they were all pretty much in focus and not bad. And Tiffany, she had just started hunting just a couple of years before that. So she shot, well, I don't know, like a 150s and 60s. And she shot one in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa. And, you know, it was easy to draw back then. And Iowa, heck, it was, you know, they're just leftover tags. You just go buy them over the counter back in those days. So we had all the, you know, great spots that, you know, we went and looked at all the time. And said with her flight benefits, when she was a flight attendant, we would just fly everywhere and spend most of the year, you know, summers and stuff looking at deer and everything. And we started just doing videos and stuff with monster bucks. And, you know, and really long story short, you know, just Scentlock came to us and said, hey, what do you guys think about hosting a TV show? Scentlock was one of the, you know, the products that we wore at that time. And I would write articles. I used to write some for like North American Whitetail and Bow Hunter and Archery World and some of the different ones. And, you know, from there, you know, just those are just products that we used and things that in the photos and that stuff. And they just came to say, hey, you think about hosting a show? And we're just like, well, I hadn't really thought about it, but I guess the timing is right. We had just moved down to Iowa. I was a chemical engineer up in Minnesota and said, I just quit up there. And we moved down to Iowa and I was like, I don't know what I'll do. I quit like in October 1st. And we're like, well, I'll think about what else I want to do around January 11th after the season is over. And yeah. So
I was still working, you know, so he was like not too concerned about it.
Yeah. And Tiffany was working still. And, you know, it was like, well, we'll just move down there. We were just building we had built a hunting cabin stuff. So we always lived there. And I figured, you know, after the season, I'd go look at Monsanto. I had a cousin that was a chemical engineer there. And of course there's Cargill and stuff by Albia. So I'll just start looking after that. And, you know, and that was, we moved down here. And like I said, October 1st. And Tiffany had a flight like October 5th, get like a 4-day trip or something to Japan. So, you know, I was like, well, I'll just go over and help Don Kiske. They were harvesting corn. So I was over there helping them. And Aubrey Gale from Scentlock called and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a show for us? I said, well, the timing is right. I guess if there's any time to try it, you know, now would be a good time. So, and that's how it happened. We never really looked for it. It just kind of fell into our laps. We just got super lucky and it just kind of hit that. You know, that whitetail craze time that was coming up, and you know, there wasn't so many shows on the Outdoor Channel yet, and you know, it was still fairly inexpensive for sponsors and airtime and all that back then. You know, it's come a long way since then, but you know, it wasn't something that we ever planned on doing. Just like I said, it just fell in our laps.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great story. You know what? And, you know, you don't become the most popular show on outdoors television just by luck. And I think you know that. And our data shows just in the last couple of months, you know, your show has been the top rated show the last two of the last 3 months on Outdoor Channel. And it continues to be top watched month after month.
Like, woohoo!
No, that's good to know.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, we just sit in our hole here and we just crank away and keep doing stuff. We don't really pay all that much attention to it. I mean, of course, you know,
but it's awesome
you
to go hear.
And get all the data and stuff, but I rarely ask for it. We just, you know, just keep going, doing what we do. And it seemed to have worked. I mean, heck, we're going on, you know, I think it's like our 17th year or something like that. It just seemed like we just started. And, you know, it's like, how did we get near 20 years into it already? You know, it's just been fun, you know, and I love it as much today as I did the day we started. So
what do you think the secret to your success is? Is there a secret that you have developed, or is it just the chemistry that you and Tiff have on camera that seems to resonate with the audiences?
Yes. I think it's a little bit of all of that, to be honest. You know, it's like, I think first of all, obviously we have something really cool here that most people don't ever have, but in all reality, we're just like everybody else. I mean, it's like our kids are disasters. We're disasters. It's like, you know, right now I've got 5 loads of laundry I probably should be doing, and, you know, the kids are running around all over. It's like, we're just really just like everybody else is, you know, so we just are ourselves. And that's just what I think people appreciate. And I think we're honest, you know, it's like we never, you know, you're never going to hear from us, oh, it was such a hard hunt. It's like, well, it might've been a hard hunt, but let's be honest. There's somebody who's getting up at 4 in the morning and going to run a jackhammer all day long. It's like, you know what? We're very lucky, even on our hardest of hard hunts. It's like, we're still not doing some of the things that, you know, the regular American people are out there doing. So you'll never, ever hear that from us. It's just like, we just know we just got darn lucky. But yeah, we do work our butts off, you know, day in and day out. But I think it is, it's just, we're very relatable, very, you know, in all reality. I mean, only thing we did is sell everything and moved down here. It's like, anybody really can do that. You know, it's like, we used to read that a lot. It's like, well, you can move down to Iowa. Well, no, I can't. You know, it's Christmas next month. It's like, yeah, but we just chose to stay Christmases together. We didn't care if we had other family and stuff around. It's like, that's not for everybody, obviously, but that's what we did, you know? So it's like, you could do that. You know, it's like, if we have a story that you could actually do.
Yeah. And like when we first started, you know, I just thought there was no bigger fan than me of all the hunting shows. And I just knew what I wanted to see. And, you know, it seemed like a lot of the shows were, you know, so they'd have, you know, even a technical segment and, you know, different things like that. And for me, I just wanted to show people just kind of your entire life all the way through. So it's not just hunting. It's, you know, stuff behind the scenes and all the other stuff too. I remember even seeing like Mark and Terry Drury in the airport, like going to the ATA show the first time, like in street clothes. And you're like, oh my gosh, I've never seen them in street clothes before. You know, I remember how neat that was for me to see. And I was just like, you know, part of our show, a lot of it should just be kind of behind the scenes, you know, just your normal life. Cause you see that you're just like everybody else, like Tiffany said, but you know, everything that we do is basically working towards deer. So I always want to try on every episode have, you know, a little bit of a backstory to deer and some of the work that goes into and what we did to, you know, for that food plot or that particular deer or whatever, then some family stuff, you know, just kidding around, having fun, showing that, you know, no matter what we're doing, we're having fun. I mean, that's why we hunt, because it's fun. And then, you know, most importantly, you just want to have great footage. And we really, you know, have prided ourselves over the years to make sure our camera guys and our equipment and everything, just to get the, you know, most, you know, beautiful footage, you know, that we can. So I think when you put, you know, some humor, some fun behind the scenes stuff, you know, with great footage and great, you know, great animals. And we try to, you know, always make good ethical shots and things. I think you just put that together. That's what we kind of started with. And it seems to have worked, you know, because there wasn't a lot of shows at the beginning that, you know, really showed too much of behind the scenes, you know, of, you know, other things that go on. We're getting ready, farming, planting, doing stuff like that. You know, it was kind of basically right to business, right in a tree stand or whatever. So we kind of wanted to show a little bit of behind the scenes and things too. So I mean, you know, that could have been it, but that was just kind of what I like wanted to see when we just started. I just thought, well, what would I like to see? And so we just, you know, we just kind of did it that way. And I remember that first time we did it at Scentlog, was Mark Baird was doing the, you know, editing at that time. And a lot of the guys in the office, you know, the older guys there were just like, I hate it. It moves too fast. Why is it? And we were, because like Mark and I were like, we don't want any scene for more than 3 seconds. Keep it moving. And they're like, we hate it. But I think it was just that they weren't used to it. You know, they're used to kind of the old style, you know, where they said they'd have someone would have a cooking segment and, you know, how you clean your 870 and stuff like that. And then a little bit of hunting. And so maybe they were kind of used to that. But then like after the first year, it was like the highest rated show in the history of the Outdoor Channel after the first year. And then everybody kind of change their tune. Is like, hey, I guess that's kind of what people want to see too, something different. So, you know, people probably maybe don't remember from that 17-18 years ago, but you know, it was very different at the time. And now I think, well, a lot of the shows have kind of went to that too, you know, a little bit more behind the scenes of sometimes what it takes, you know, what you put into a hunt, you know, it's what you get out of it. And so we kind of wanted to show that, because it's not like, hey, you know, we were born with a silver spoon in our mouth, made all this great property, and all we got to do is blow the dust off our bow on October 1st and go out and shoot a 200-inch deer. I mean, that is not the way it happened. I mean, my dad was a bricklayer, and Tiffany's dad was a truck driver. We had nothing. Basically, just moved down here. We just work our butts off, work real hard every day, you know, started with a small farm and grew it and grew it and grew it. And, you know, eventually been able to buy other ones and just by taking loans out. And even on that, you're just kind of like taking a risk. Hey, what could happen to the land market, anything else? You know, it's all risk, just like any business that you want to start of your own. But it all worked out good that, you know, land prices, especially hunting land prices, went up. So our investments were good rather than having in my 401k and stuff at another job. And of course, we use the land and stuff for our shows. And, you know, but it's 24/7. I mean, it's every single day. I mean, that we're out doing things and the work people went, if they understood the work that goes into, you know, behind every deer that you shoot, you know, they'd understand more why you're successful. It's just like anything. It's how much work you put in at the front end.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, having a great story and an authenticity about you has really been a great key. And you talk about the work behind the scenes. Can you talk to us a little bit about managing whitetails? I mean, it's crazy to hear you say that, you know, Iowa used to be over the counter. That's incredible. But, you know, you guys put a lot of time and energy, as you mentioned, into managing your whitetail population. Is there something there that people can learn from? And I know you do some teaching through the TV show. What can be duplicated from that that's worked well for you?
Yeah, I mean, and just going back to Iowa was never over the counter. It was always a draw. But when we first started, there were, you know, if they let out 6,000 tags, 5,000 would even be drawn for it. There'd be 1,000 that were just leftovers. So, like, we never even thought about putting in for the draw. You just say, well, there's 400, 500, 800, 900 left over. We'll just go buy them that, you know, before we lived here. And then when we lived here, it didn't matter. But, you know, the thing is, like, every single day we're doing something for whitetails down here. Like, today I was just shed hunting. You know, I have a buddy down and we're doing that. And even though that's, you think that that's fun and it is, but you still learn something from it. You know, different deer, you know, where you'd seen them from photos all year to where they're, you know, at least wherever you find their horns, you know that they were at least there once. And normally it's, you know, and especially worked out perfect this year that was so cold, you know, right during that time when they were dropping. So you really kind of got to see where they were bedding and things. You just learn so much about them. But right now, when, you know, we spent, you know, all of January and February going through equipment and getting, you know, all the planting and tractors and oil changes and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, working on, okay, what deer do we want to target for next year? Which ones do I think, you know, that changes a lot. Some deer that you think are going to really blow up don't, and some that you don't think are going to do much really do. And so you start thinking about what farms have the most potential. So how, you know, okay, let's take those farms that might have something that's really good this year. And let's really strategically plan out food plots where we want them housed and make sure you have something for early season, mid, late, you know, so the entire year you can be hunting them every single day, you know. And we try to do that at most of our farms. I pay a little bit more attention to the ones that, you know, if there's a real big one someplace. But, you know, it's just, it never stops. I mean, the work that you go into it is, you know, and you wouldn't need to spend that much time if you just had, you know, one farm. But we've got, you know, several farms around. I got some buddies of mine that we, you know, partnered up with and stuff. So we got, you know, 10 different, 12 different farms. So it's, you know, 103 different food plots and then plus the regular farming as well. So it's a big undertaking, you know, getting all that done. But if you just had one farm, said, well, you could really micromanage that to make sure it's perfect, you know, every year. And that's, you know, on our show, we try to show some of those tips and even planting and how to get the most successful, you know, clover fields or bean fields, you know, what kind of chemicals you want to use, and what kind of planting practices to make sure you kind of keep it weed free right from the beginning and you know, that you're not going to be struggling with it later. You know, there's just so much that goes into it.
Yeah, like you said, not everybody realizes that. And, you know, being from Minnesota, we're up here in Minnesota, we're native Minnesotans. You don't get a lot of opportunity to manage, you know, the buck herd, especially on public land. So you had a great quote that, you know, to get a great buck, you have to pass on a really good buck.
Right, right.
You know, having that opportunity to manage a herd like that, you know, what's been the big difference for you coming from Minnesota and you know, and then now having your own area to manage?
That was definitely just exactly what you said. When we came down here at our first farm, it was like, you know, you thought, okay, I'm just going to shoot, you know, good deer. We're going to pass on, you know, younger ones. But what you ended up doing was, if you had a really good genetic, like 3-year-old that was, you know, maybe 150 or 160, we were shooting it. You know, it's 160 inch deer. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, it's big deer, and it is. But we were passing, you know, 8 points that were like 5 years old because they were poor genetics. You know, and about the third or fourth year, you're like, yeah, that's the worst management strategy ever. You know, we're shooting every good young deer we have and leaving pretty soon by the a couple of years after that. It was, we had just an old, you know, junk 8 point running on every ridge. You're like, well, that was terrible, you know? So you learned right away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always the experience teaches you a lot, right? And
right. And even, yeah, now even like neighbors will shoot, like you get a 3 year old, they're, the 3 year olds are about the dumbest deer, you know, because they kind of want to be breeders and they can be. So they're really aggressive. You know, you rattle and grunt those, the ones that come running in. So that's the hard thing when you have like a really good 3 year old that could be, you know, maybe even a close to 170, you know, 60s for sure. That, you know, people that don't really know deer by looking at them, you know, looking at them quick too. I mean, a lot of times, you know, in the rut, they come chasing the door, running through, you see this giant rack on it and they're shooting, you know, they just see rack. But then a lot of times they get them on the ground. Yeah. I mean, it looked like a, you know, a 200 inch deer when it was on a, you know, 130 inch body on the thing for a young deer. So a lot of our good ones, that 3 year old get shot, especially when they're good ones, because they're dumb. But if we can get them past three, by four, they get a little smarter. And by five, they're pretty much locked in, you know, to a, to a specific spot where, you know, like on one of our farms, they don't leave it very often. So that's what probably the biggest learning curve was, just learning ages of those deer. And you don't blame anybody else, because I was there. And say, look at our walls. There's a bunch of those first years where those 3 year olds, like I was talking about, they were 160s and you were just thrilled to have a 160, but then start looking at it, those were the deer that had that potential to go to the 180s and 90s and beyond. And the ones that you were passing were ones that never had a chance, you know, to even get to 160s really. So you really kind of learn, you know, okay, and it used to be you think, you know, a mature deer is 4 years old and they went to five and now I really don't shoot anything until six. You know, and just the older you see, the older you can get those deer, you know, the bigger they're going to get. They certainly don't top out at six, seven, eight, or even nine. You know, they're always getting bigger in 90% of the cases. So, but you know, with the HD and everything else, you really got to weigh out your odds. But we let everything get to at least five, and but we'd like to get them to six now. But you know, that was the biggest learning curve, I think, was, you know, just knowing age on the hoof and judging them right away. And that's, you know, that's the hardest thing for people. And of course, everybody wants to shoot a good deer, so you have to shoot some of those, you know, you have to shoot some of the three-year-old 160s and stuff. And then you start seeing other deer, you go to the, you know, the Iowa deer class just last weekend, you see a wall of 200s and start thinking, man, what these deer can do. And then you start looking at your deer on your wall and you're like, man, see what that thing could have been in another year or two. And then, you know, that's what gets you there. You know, Tiffany's cousin, remember him down here several years ago, and he's like, man, every big deer that we see, you say he's not old enough. And, you know, it kind of started seeming to me like they were like, hey, you're just not letting us shoot any big ones. And I was like, no, Dave, I'm telling you, I want you to shoot a big one. That's why I'm telling you, because these deer aren't as big as you think, because they're young and they just have small bodies and they look good, but they're not going to be what you came here, what you waited, you know, 4 years to draw for. And so he shot one of those. And then they could see the look on his face when he came to get it. And it was like 160 something inch deer. And I was like, hey, Dave, you should be thrilled about it. That's the biggest deer you ever shot. Said, yeah. But that day, Tiffany had shot an 8 point that was like 6 years old. It was just giant. And we had him hanging up in the cooler too. And he brought him in there. The thing looked like a puppy dog compared to it. And then he could really see. He's like, oh, yeah, now I see. If I asked him today, you know, what's the biggest mistake you ever think you made? He would say that immediately, because you could just see it on his face, how disappointed he was in himself for shooting that deer, but he thought it was a giant. And they looked like that. I said, everybody does that, Dave. I said, I've shot lots of them. And Tiffany shot them, you know, and it took a while for us to learn that, you know, that, hey, you let those ones go. It might be a little sacrifice for a couple of years, but really, face it, you know, it's 2 years away and that deer could be a 200. So, you know, you just try to look for, if we just kind of strictly shoot deer off of age. You know, don't worry about what their racks are. You know, if they're five or older, those are the ones we're targeting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that was, I think that's the hardest thing for people, is just judging age and stuff right off the bat. And everybody wants to shoot one. So that's the hard thing about, you know, neighbors and stuff. And, you know, I hear it everywhere you go, every, you know, seminar you do, everything. Well, if I got to shoot him. If I don't shoot him, my neighbor will. I said, well, look, you're the neighbor you're talking about. You know, I mean, you know, if you let 10 of them go and one makes it, well, hey, if you got one to shoot to hunt next year, it's better than zero, right? Yeah. So, you know, but it's tough. I mean, I understand it. You know, it's easy for me to say, because I live in Iowa. There's not that many people. We have lots of land. It's not like you got, you know, not that we don't have plenty of people sitting on our fence lines, but not like, you know, in some other states that have a lot more hunters. But so we're super lucky that way. But you can do it anyway. I mean, I go fishing up the Lake of the Woods a lot, and you go up by, you know, you get there by Baudette and stuff, and you see where agriculture starts again. You're like, man, I'll bet you that I could do the same thing up here as I could down here in Iowa. And in my mind, I think I can. And I'd love to try it someday. You know, it's to show that it's not, you can do it wherever. You know, you keep thinking about that. It's like, maybe the next place I buy, maybe I would try some in Minnesota and try it.
Well, hey, Lee, I was going to kind of transition to a little bit about, you know, our relationship. Obviously, you're sponsored by Federal, and mm-hmm. we're super excited about that relationship. And there's lots of ways to get animals, you know, put either in the freezer or on the wall, and whether it's archery, slug. But we introduced a muzzleloader innovation last year called Firestick, and you were there at SHOT Show to help us launch mm-hmm. it. That was obviously in 2019, but the product was out really for in use this past fall.
I got to shoot my first deer with it this year.
So what are your thoughts on the system and the experiences you had that you can share without giving away too many results? Because obviously you want your viewers to tune in to watch those results.
Oh my God. I could even add in on that one. It was so easy. It's like, I absolutely loved using the fire stick. It's like, it just took a lot of the guesswork out of shooting a muzzleloader for me. I mean, I've gotten, obviously I've used them for a while now. So I've got not the fire sticks, but muzzleloaders. So I've gotten pretty used to it, but it's just, like I said, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. You know, there's no longer somebody comes back and they're like, I missed. And you're like, well, did you load it right? It just takes a lot of the guesswork out of it.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I'm just very anal about everything. I mean, just being an engineer is kind of, you know, the way my brain works is just, you know, combined with like our SIG scopes that have the BDX system on there, you know, that you want it to be just perfectly accurate. You know, you kind of expect them to almost be like a rifle nowadays, you know, with the way the technology has gone. And just knowing that it's going to be the exact amount of powder in it every time, that you're not going to have to weigh it out. And then when you're pouring in, you know, the powder, how much of it, you know, especially if it's a follow-up shot on something and you're shaking, how much of it goes in your barrel compared to outside of it. You know, we've done that before, you know, reloading them in windy day and it's, you know, powder's blowing out as you're going in there. You don't know how much exactly you get in there.
Never happened to us.
Yeah. And so then, you know, then you don't know exactly where your bullet is sitting. Like you push on and with 50 pounds of pressure or 5 pounds of pressure, you know, and there's just so many different variables. And with that, with the fire stick, you know, that takes all that away, and especially, you know, rain, condensation, snow, all that stuff. I mean, we did the test, you know, you can drop those things in water, dunk the gun underwater, and still shoots, you know, perfectly. But it's just real nice to have, you know, for us having the you know, the muzzleloaders, and not have to, you know, because I used to weigh it all out and everything, all the powder, to make sure they were all the same, just knowing that it's all, every shot's going to be.
Well, and it's like I said, repeatable. It's so much easier because you just talk about weighing everything out. We have a little neighbor that used to live by us that when we moved, and he's an old guy, and it's so funny because he's like, I brought over all my reloads for you to reload. I'm like, okay, Jim, like, you know, I mean, well, like, you know, you can go down to the store and just do that yourself, right? But whatever, he's 80 some years old, so we just do it for him. But I was like, this is a pain in the butt. I was like, oh my gosh. He's like, well, my birthday's coming up, maybe I should get one of those fire things, you know. Like I said, he's like 85, and I'm like, yeah, I think you probably should, because it'll make it easier on us. So
right, for an accuracy standpoint, you know, we have the you know, the traditions, and like there's a wall in there. So when you push that bullet down, it goes to the same spot every time. And you put the fire stick in there. It's a pre-measured. He's going to have your, it's just going to be so much more repeatable. And like when we shoot it, we set it at 100, you know, and then you have your BDX system. You shoot it at 200 and 300. And we've actually had like at 400. And you can't believe how accurate you're like, I can't believe that we're hitting that, you know, that steel target down at 400 yards without, you know, just setting it in one time. You take three shots to get it in at 100 and bang, bang. It's just, it's amazing the accuracy that they have with that. And then of course the safety aspect too, because you always wonder about that, you know, people double loading them, because in, like now it's so easy. If you don't shoot one, you just pull the fire stick out. But in the old days, you know, it's just like, well, you got this powder in there, and you don't want to shoot it after every time that you hunt. So sometimes, you know, you pull the breech plug out and try to dump the powder out, and then all the powder gets stuck in the, you know, in the threads, and then you clean it all out. And it was just like such a pain doing that. And, you know, now, and so a lot of times we always leave them, you know, just leave them loaded. But then, you know, I always put one of the rubber, balloons over the top of the barrel, just so I say, okay, when that's on there, you know it's loaded. But you know, so you try to do some things just so people, you know, if they don't realize, you double load it, you know, dump the powder back on top of the bullet, put another bullet in there, and you could, you know, it could be a dangerous situation. So at least with that fire stick, you just crack it open, you pull it out. Of course, you can see if there's a bullet in there or not just by cracking it open and looking in there, and you can push the bullet out, or at least you know, hey, if I can see right through it, totally empty. And obviously you can see the fire stick when you open it up. So it just makes it a lot safer. But, you know, talking about, what more could you ask for? I guess. I mean, you get it's safest muzzleloader ever made, and the most accurate. So,
well, we thank you for that endorsement. I mean, because your experiences are authentic and true, and I think that once your viewers, your audiences see that system in place, they'll come to put all those words into visuals as well, and we'll convert more people into using this system.
For sure. I mean, like Tiffany was talking, that Jim, our neighbor, he was the mayor of our old town, and he's getting up there in his 80s now. So he'd always have me, hey, can you just load those loads for me just to make sure that you got it right? You know, just wasn't, you know, totally confident that he was going to be measuring the right amounts and stuff like that. So I'd always measure it out for him, the powder, and put them in little tubes for him, and everything, and have all the reloads for him. So now when, you know, with this, it's just use ours, you know, just all he's got to do is, you know, put a bullet down in there and just pop the fire stick in. And at the end of the day, just pop it out, you know, take it out, stick it in the pouch, and you go out hunting again, just pop another one in. So it's something that he can do very easy and feels a lot more confident in them. So I think there's a lot of people that, you know, they obviously, to people that shoot muzzleloaders all the time, it's not that complicated, you know, to measure out the powder and dump it in and put the bullet in the breech plug. But for someone who's not really familiar with it and not, maybe not used to being around guns and stuff, it can maybe be a little bit intimidating to them, you know, maybe not feel 100% confident they're doing it right and things, because I always kind of take it for granted myself. But then even some of my buddies from high school that I know have hunted up with them my entire life, you know, I'll get them a muzzleloader because they always, you can take advantage of the muzzleloader seasons, and they're always calling me, okay, now, what exactly, do I want 100 grains or 120, or what's the difference, or what should I be using for my son, and just different things like that, you know, that people aren't 100% confident with it like they would be with the rifle. It's pretty easy, you stick a bullet in there. But now with the fire stick, it's just that easy, and it does come in two different, you know, grains. You can get 100 grain or 120. So if you wanted a little bit lighter load for, you know, if you don't need it, or for a kid or someone, they don't want such a want to kick so hard, that, you know, it just brings the confidence to people if they think it might be a little bit complicated, they don't want to mess with it, for but they still want to take advantage of those muzzleloader seasons. That's the system for you.
Yep. Well, and you guys hunt more than just deer, obviously. I saw some recent posts of out doing some pheasant hunting and duck hunting. You have a couple of retrievers. But yeah, tell me a little bit about your upland and waterfowl experiences and what you enjoy about those hunting adventures.
I mean, for me, it's watching the dogs work. I mean, hands down, I always see these people who are like, I shot a pheasant with my bow. And I'm like, why would you do that? I want to see my dog get it up, and I want to see him retrieve it and stuff. It's like, that's just not for me on that. I just love watching those dogs work. And of course, Lee grew up with it. I didn't. You know, when we first got Tank, And I just did a post on him yesterday because I was like, sometimes we ride. It's like when you're an 11-year-old lab, you don't have to run all the time anymore. But because he was so funny because he wanted to get the antler, but he's like, yeah, I just want to get back in the Ranger, which, you know, 5 years ago, that would have never been him. But it's like, you know, he's getting up there. So I was like, yep, when you're this age, you can ride if you want to, you know. But I still stop and let him get the antler if I see one, you know. But it's just, like I said, hands down, just watching those dogs work is what I love about it.
Yeah, I mean, most people can, you know, associate, you know, me or us with whitetails, and it is. But, you know, growing up in Minnesota, I mean, I lived in Columbia Heights. Like I said, I could see the IDS tower from my bedroom window. So I didn't have any good places to hunt. We didn't have anybody that, no farmers or anyone that owned land in our family, nothing. So just like me and my buddy, like our dads would take us, you know, out duck hunting, because that was easier to find duck hunting places. Just go up to Cambridge and around Rice Creek and all the places around Minnesota. It wasn't too hard to find ducks, but to find, you know, deer was a little bit tougher. So, but as soon as, like, Paul was 1 year older than me, so when he turned 16 and got his driver's license, we had our own cars to go around. Then we were out every night up around Lionel Lakes and Scandia and Forest Lake and every place, you know, looking at for deer and fields and talking to farmers. And way back then, it was easy to get bow hunting spots. And even people that hunted, they're like, what, you want to try shooting with a bow? Yeah, go ahead. And then, of course, when we started killing a couple, that kind of changed. Well, maybe we'll reconsider that. So that's when you kind of realized that, okay, I got to try to work as hard as I can and get something of my own, because you kind of see the writing on the wall. That's going to become a lot harder to hunt places. But instead, we didn't have as many places to deer hunt. So I duck hunted and pheasant hunted, you know, as a kid more than we deer hunted. And so I still have that, you know, they don't see it on the show as much, but I still have that, you know, that love of the waterfall and upland birds, you know. Up at my grandparents is up in, you know, in the northern Minnesota, McKinley, little town of McKinley up there. And we used to grouse hunt, rabbit hunt and everything. So, you know, I've still shot a shotgun probably more times than a bow in my life. So
I always tell the story. We had to go to like an NRA, like it was outdoor thing, channel thing, but it was like this big NRA celebrity shoot, and it was with Blake Shelton and everything. And there was this huge shoot off, and Lee freaking won it. You know, I mean, he like straight up won it. They were like, a bow hunter won this. I mean, there was like absolute uproar. And he's like, people don't realize how much I used to shoot. I used to shoot
trap leagues, sporting clay leagues, and everything. I've shot guns more times than I've shot a bow in my life, likely. So people were a little surprised on that.
It was funny, though. He won this big Wayne LaPierre, like custom gun and everything. It was like I said, it was kind of an uproar. They were like, how did he win that? I thought he could only shoot a bow.
That's perfect. Well, and speaking of shotguns, I know up here, we talked a little bit before we got on about how the weather's starting to warm up. Everybody here's got cabin fever, and we are really excited for turkey season. So you guys got plans for turkey, and is that coming up for you?
Yeah, I'm like, the most excited thing is Cameron is going to shoot his first turkey this year, and he is just jacked. I mean, he's like, you know who's got two thumbs and is going to shoot a turkey? This guy. He does this joke all the time.
I got to post that joke. It's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that one. And obviously, I always love turkey hunting. It's just always so much fun. So much more. It's so social. I mean, it's like deer hunting, obviously, is like social a little bit. But you have to take showers and you have to stay clean. And you just, I don't know. It's just, you can have like 15 of you out turkey hunting all together. You know, I guarantee you when Cameron shoots his first turkey, there'll probably be 10 of us out there when he shoots it. You know, it's like we'll all be just high-fiving and hooping and hollering. So it's like, I always love turkey hunting.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it's perfect to introduce kids. I've taken my daughters out, and it's a blast. So speaking of introducing kids to it, do you have a certain gauge or load that you'll use with them versus what you would shoot?
Yeah, we're just going to use the 410.
Give them a 10-gauge, just like they did to me the first time I ever done
it. Start them out right.
That's honest to God true story. I shot the first time, and I'm like, this didn't work very well. I fell right back over. I was like, oh, this is awesome. So do not do that.
No. Lee, that's not a good first date trip right there.
That wasn't my fault. We put that squarely on Simmons, right?
Jeff Simmons. Kyle had
Simmons
Jeff Sporting
Goods. Like, oh, no, don't worry about a gun. I got one for her.
Like, I don't think I realized I was 5'2 and 120 pounds. And like I said, even waiters, they're like, yeah, we got waiters. I'm like, little did I know. I was like, nobody has extra waiters at a size 6.5, you know? So, yeah, anyways, but you know what? It ended up being a blast. I mean, I never hit a thing, but, it was fun.
Yeah, that was a little hilarious. We weren't planning on hunting, so we didn't bring our stuff. We were just going to an appearance at Simmons Sporting Goods Hey, you want to go out duck hunting? You know, it's like, yeah, sure. So that's what he had. Yeah, but now we got guns for, waiters for.
Jeff loves his 10 gauge.
Oh, he right. does. Yeah, so you know Jeff. Yeah, we were walking out of the water together, and it was so funny because I had size 9 waders on in this muck walking. I'm like, there is no chance I am.
Yeah, our feet would come right out of the things and fall over in the water. But yeah, so but it was there's still some we still talk about today. I mean, some of those are the funnest times, you know. But yeah, we got a bunch of some of the 410 stuff last year because I wanted to shoot one myself maybe with my 410 because I got my little crack open 410 that I had like when I was a kid. And I thought about shooting one, but I didn't. So this year I was thinking about Cameron maybe shooting one with my 410 that I had when I was a kid, but it's still too big for him. I mean, back, we couldn't hunt by ourselves I didn't really hunt, until we were 12, till we had in Minnesota, until we had our hunter safety card. Mm-hmm. But here in Iowa, they can be at any age, really, as long as they're with it.
Yeah, they have a Hunter Apprentice program, which is awesome in Iowa. It's like you got to give them kudos because it's like you get those kids out there well before you lose them, for lack of interest. You know, it's like 12, it's almost getting too old to just introduce a kid to hunting. So yeah, it's so nice.
Video games and other things. So we just want to make sure we start him early. He just loves shooting, his BB gun. Then you got a new Savage 22 and the 410.
When I,
yeah, he's a really good shooter.
Awesome.
So I was going to just on my 410, it's just too long for him still because I didn't have it until I was 12. And so I was going to chop it off. I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. So I just ordered a new stock for him and so I can cut the new one off. And then he's bigger than I put my original one on. So that would be, so it doesn't change, it was my first shotgun that I ever got that my dad got for me. So.
But then Savage actually has one. So maybe we'll just get him one of those. I don't know.
Yeah, Savage makes that 410-22 combination.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And it looked pretty slick. So like I said, maybe we'll just get him one of those. I don't know.
Sweet. Yeah. So you all have obviously had a lot of opportunity to hunt more than just Iowa. And I'm sure Iowa's probably your favorite, but when you talk about destination hunts and unique opportunities, what stands out to you both as a really unique hunt and a place you'd want to go again?
Kodiak Island for me. Mountain goat hunting, that was like probably one of my favorite trips. Although that moose I smoked a couple years ago, that was pretty phenomenal too. But you can't do a ton of those trips because it's like, where do you put all those animals when you shoot them, because they're just so amazing and huge and everything. But just the experience of both those places was just something that I'll never forget, and I just still bring back the best memories.
Yeah, and I just any of those type of hunts like that too, I think kind of everything, but I'd say actually one of my favorites is mule deer, just because the chess game part of it, which I just love. But like Tiffany said, that I'd recommend anybody to go like on a mountain goat hunt because they're they're not as expensive as sheep and stuff like that. It's for sheep. I love hunting those because they're the hardest for me. Like if you're trying with archery equipment, it's like the hardest thing you can do, and that's why I like it. I like stuff is that the challenge and the hardest thing you can do, but like mountain goats aren't near as expensive. You don't have to mortgage your house.
They're just a cool animal. Shoot one,
but it's the same kind of a hunt, and it's just so beautiful there, like in the mountains. That when we were on Kodiak, I've been there a number of times, and it just worked out so good for Tiffany when she was there. So just kind of prepping her for it, because like every time I've been to Kodiak, you're there for 10 days, it'll rain 8 of them. It'd be miserable, and you're in tents and stuff, and you're wet, and you can't get dry. So I kind of prepping her for that. And then we go there in 7 days of like weather you have today. I mean, it's like nice and cool at night, 50s and 60s during the day.
Sunny.
It never rained. It was sunny. I was just like,
I'm like, this is that awesome. Is he's like, this is very unusual.
Like mountain hunting because they'll love it. And then the next time they go when it's miserable, they won't, it won't seem so miserable to them. At least they, but when you prep somebody for it and it just turned out the weather was, I'd never have said, we sat on that dock out there waiting for the float plane at Kodiak And I was just like, I have never stood on this deck when it's not pouring rain. I mean, I've been here tons of times. And it's never have I stood on this in nice weather. It's always been raining standing on this floatplane dock. Perfect. So she got super lucky on that, or both of us did. But, you know, at least she got to, you know, you kind of can think more about the hunt and the enjoyable part of that hunt rather than thinking how miserable it was. You were soaked every day.
You know, it's funny though, you say that, and we're talking about hunting and stuff. And I just got our kids this book called In the Boonies, and it's about this fly out fishing trip. And it's like, that's like another thing though. It's like, I absolutely love when we used to do those fly out fishing trips up to Canada, where you're just, there's just something like, you know, the Kodiak and the moose hunting and stuff. It's like when you just get dropped off and then the float plane takes off and you're just there and you're like, this is so cool. Do you know how many people will never experience this in their entire lives? I mean, just to be out there like that, you know, with nobody around and places that very few people have been, is just something real cool, like regardless of whether you have any success or not.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. You mentioned mountain goat hunting. That's listed as one of the most dangerous hunts too. So I'm sure that the weather being good was a positive thing.
Yeah. It is? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Just the terrain that they're in, there's a high chance of falling, especially if there's bad weather.
Yeah. I mean, see, that's why I kind of really like on Kodiak, because they have like the high rocky peaks and stuff, but they come down into the lower grassy stuff to eat. So you could just ambush them there. But, you know, I've been around other places like in Colorado and different places where it's just all rock.
Pretty
treacherous. And you're just kind of thinking, you know, even the places where you want to shoot one, well, if you shoot him here and he falls down there, you aren't getting to him. So, you know, there's a lot goes into it and think about, but that's what's really nice about Kodiak, because it has the rough stuff, but it has a lot of the green grassy stuff below it too, where they we were plenty high and up there, you know, where they had to get to them, but not like, well, I mean, I wouldn't say not very dangerous, because some of the stuff that Tiffany was on, we're like, oh, I hope she's okay on this. And she was great on it. But, you know, I mean, so there always is that risk, but but it's beautiful there. I mean, but I think like on Kodiak probably isn't as risky as some of the other places.
Yeah, no, it wasn't as bad as BC.
So circling back around to, we just talked about the show, what can viewers, as we get close to ending up this conversation, what can viewers expect to see that's going to be new on this year's series of content? And when do you expect that new content to be airing?
I think the new airing start in like the first week of July. And that kind of...
Getting ready to film a bunch of stuff for it. So I know it's coming up here.
Yeah. But for this year, the one I'm excited about is I shot my biggest deer ever this year. And so that's one that I'm looking forward to see. They're just, you know, editing those things now. So you're just, you know, kind of waiting to look at I'm just as excited to see the rough cuts and stuff they send to me for approval and stuff first. And then, you know, we had some great elk hunts and mule deer hunts and stuff last year.
And then, of course, Cameron's.
Yeah.
First turkey will be on there.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a bummer that, you know, with the COVID stuff, was we had a couple, you know, some of my favorite mule deer hunts and some of my other stuff up in Canada where that was closed, that we couldn't do. So hopefully this year, you know, that border opens up again and we can get back to some of those hunts that we love doing up there so much too.
Tiffany, you had some obvious, for most people that know your story, you're very open about it. You are a cancer survivor and you've got some good news you shared recently on social. We'd love to have you share with our listeners as well.
Yep. 3 years. I mean, just had another clean checkup, and in all reality, they don't expect it ever to come back just the way we were treated. We treated it like super, super aggressively. We could have went a couple different options, but it's like, you know what? We got to do the one that has the best chance of, kind of makes me teary. It's like, cause that's right. That's the thing about like the mountain goat hunt. That was like one of the first big hunts after I had beat cancer. And I just remember getting to the top of that mountain going, you know what? I made it, you know?
That's cool.
Fantastic. Great news.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, like I said, we just treated it really aggressive. And so now I just, I get treated I get tested every 6 months. And actually it's just the weirdest thing, because of the type of cancer I had, my blood, they just test my HCG, which is crazy because it's also the pregnancy hormone, obviously. But I tell you, the one cool thing, now that you're like touching on that, it's like my doctor, my oncologist, was freaking phenomenal. I mean, he was just absolutely amazing. And he's married to a local Iowa woman whose family was like a big hunter. He's like, I don't know anything about hunting. He's like, I don't know that I could even shoot a shotgun. It's like, you can cure cancer. I'm pretty sure you can shoot a shotgun, you know? And so he was going to turkey hunt with us last year. He's never hunted a day in his life. He's like, my brother-in-law is going to die if I shoot a turkey, because nobody ever thought I would ever shoot anything.
So hopefully we can get him this year. Last year with that COVID.
Yeah, with COVID hitting. We couldn't get him down here, you know, with everything going on. And of course, he's a doctor still up at the University of Iowa. But so this year he's going to come down here and turkey hunt with us, which is going to be so fun, because it's like obviously taking somebody totally out of their element and in ours, you know. And it's like, obviously when I was treated, we were at the best treatment possible and in his element, so it was pretty awesome. So it'll be really cool. But yeah, definitely it's like one of those things. But it's like we were just talking about, you know, how much hunting has helped me through all of that. It's just like the thing is, it's like if you're a hunter or a fisherman or an outdoorsman, you never have, even when it's the worst of the worst. Obviously mine was cancer and, you know, everybody going through COVID and all the other stuff. It's like, but you still always are optimistic. They can't take that part away from you. You know, you always have something to look forward to. It's like they can't shut down the entire world and all that stuff. So it's like, even though Canada was shut down and stuff, we were still like, well, you know what? We can hunt in the backyard. We can go fishing here. We can go do this. It's like, if you're an outdoorsman,
we'll get
something to look forward to.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic news and a great message. I think we've got more and more new people joining us outside too, which is great for our sport and the future and habitat. So,
especially this last year, it's like, I think it got more people back out there than they used to be.
Yeah, for sure. Great story. And we'll get through it all, right?
Yeah.
We'll get back through it. Well, now we don't have a choice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Lee, Tiffany, thank you very much for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk with you. And, you know, we look forward to hopefully everybody tuning in will tune into your show Sunday nights on the Outdoor Channel. And we appreciate having you on.
Well, yeah, thanks. It was great talking with you guys, too. And just we really appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, thank you so much, you guys. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. We'll see you in the field this fall.
Heck yeah.
After this break, we will expand further into turkey season with Shot Shell product line manager Dan Compton to talk about heavyweight TSS and many more.
Meet the industry's widest variety of game-changing ammunition. However you shoot and whatever you hunt, fortune favors the prepared. And nothing prepares you better than Federal Premium. It's a gold standard advantage delivered directly from the experts in premium ammunition. Find your Federal Premium Advantage today.
Welcome back to It's Federal Season and our technology segment, Tech Talk.
I'm Jason Nash, along with Shot Shell product line manager Dan Compton, to talk all things turkey. Dan, spring turkey seasons are pretty much opened in all parts of the U.S., and it's a great year for the cabin fever, especially these days. Before we talk product, what is it about turkey hunting that you enjoy from a personal perspective?
You know, the best part about turkey hunting for me has always been, I turkey hunted a few times over the years, but then I finally went with somebody who knew what they were doing, and we sat down and we called and we got that response from really far away, and then 10 minutes later, he called again and we got the response and it was closer. And then 10 minutes later, it was closer. And it worked about 45 minutes. We never actually got the bird. But, you know, that was the first time where I was hooked right there. That anticipation, that buildup, that's what you can't beat about turkey hunting.
Yeah, well, I think we've all experienced that level of excitement. It's really awesome. Let's talk about three categories of premium turkey loads, starting with our Grand Slam, the Flight Control Flex Wad system. Give us a quick overview of the load and some of the features and benefits.
Yeah, so Grand Slam is our copper-plated load. Copper-plated lead shot's been used as a staple in turkey hunting since shotguns have been invented, and they started plating with copper shot. You add copper to a lead shot, it helps reduce some of the deformation. You know, there's a lot of pressure built up in a shell, and you think, like, hit the gas in a car, and it sucks you back into the seat. That's what's happening inside that shotgun shell. So you're starting to flatten out the pellets on the back. And those are going to be your flyers and your pattern. Turkey hunters want tight pattern. They want as many pellets as we can put in a 10-inch circle as possible. So add a little copper plating to it. Helps keep your shot round, helps keep your pattern tighter. So we got really premium good copper plated shot. We use our flight control flex wad, which is our flight control design, a rear braking wad, really tight, consistent patterns. And then when we updated the wad a few years ago to the flex design, where now you can shoot through a ported choke tube, which is really important to a lot of turkey hunters. There's a lot of aftermarket chokes that are ported, and it is specifically designed to work well through those, or if you're using a straight tube system as well. So copper plated shot, flight control flex wad. It is a buffered load as well. That buffered adds a little bit of cushion in there as well. You know, like just like with the driving example, it's going to be kind of like a shock absorber and helps the shot fly truer when it leaves instead of wanting to just fly all over the place. So good buffer copper plated load. We have it in 10 gauge all the way down to 20. It's our most robust lineup that we have out there.
And we've got a great partnership with the Meat Eater on several product lines, and the one turkey product that they chose to make their addition is Third Degree. That's what they use to fill their freezers, is what we say. It's a unique blend of shot sizes and shot material. Talk about that product and where that came from and where it fits in the lineup.
Yeah, Third Degree is our blended load. So there's lead shot and there's tungsten shot in there as well. And that tungsten is now TSS shot, so 18 grams per density. And we'll talk about that a little more in a little bit. And our thought process on that was, as you are choking so tight on for a turkey hunter, as those birds get closer, you got to be really spot on. You got to be right on the head to get them. So we thought, what if we can make a load that spread out a little quicker up front, but still gave you plenty of pellets and you could still take a bird down at that 40 to 50 yard range? And Third Degree was the answer. So we start with what we call Flight Stopper Shot, which is our banded shot design that we first launched in the Black Cloud product. And if you've ever shot Prairie Storm for pheasants, it's the same shot that is in that as well. And because it's out around, it does scatter a little quicker. So your pattern from 10 to 15 yards does open up a little bit more. It's about a 25 to 30% increase on that close-up pattern. At the core of it is number 5 copper-plated lead, so our mainstay in the lineup turkey hunters been using forever. And then we have number 7 TSS tungsten shot, which is twice as dense as lead. So that flight stopper number 6 is going to open up, get them up close. You got a nice dense pattern in the middle of number 5 copper-plated lead, and the number 7 is what's going to round out your pattern and give you that distance where you can shoot the turkey at 40 to 50 yards. And tungsten loads are very popular in turkey, but they do have a bigger price tag to them. Where Third Degree comes in, it takes a little bit of that edge off the price. So you're still getting a real good premium performer, but you don't quite have to shell out as much at the store.
So nice middle ground for people who want a little more forgiving pattern and still a little bit of that tungsten. Now, TSS has been all the rage the last several years in turkey hunting, and even before with people who hand loaded. What is it about that pellet that's so devastating?
Sure. The main feature is density. It's a tungsten super shot is an 18 grams per cubic centimeter density tungsten, where lead is about 11 grams per cubic centimeter. So if you're going to take one little cube of tungsten and one little cube of lead and weigh them, one's going to be 18 grams, one's going to be 11. Anytime an object is heavier, if you put those two at the same speed, that one's going to have more energy. So mass times velocity equals foot-pounds energy. The benefit of that is, so now you got this denser pellet. If you were to break them down going at the same speed, a number 9 tungsten super shot has the same amount of energy as a number 5 copper-plated lead. So now you can take a tungsten load. So let's say a number 5 copper-plated lead load at 1.75 ounces is going to have about 298 pellets in the payload. If you move that to a 9 shot, now you got a pellet that hits just as hard going at the same speed, and you're up in your payload to about 634. So you've doubled your pellets. That means you're putting more than, you can almost, and it flies a little better than lead as well. You can put almost triple inside a 10-inch circle. So it really rounds out your pattern. Turkeys can be tough, and that's why people want to choke tight and put as many on them as possible. It's all about that pellet count and that extended energy. It's going to give you a little bit more range, but you're really putting a lot more pellets on the bird.
That's devastating. I know it took a long time for people to adjust their thinking to small shot sizes.
Yeah,
like that.
It's kind of counterintuitive, and you know, in a way, you think, well, how can I, you know, and laws were in place that we actually had to lobby and show the technology of why this is a better solution. Because if you are using lead and you're going to a 7 shot, an 8 shot, you are giving up a lot of energy, but it's that increased density that really puts you over the top.
Thank you. Well, and with you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel for COVID and everybody having to lock down, but with the nation still and the world still dealing with this, you know, we expect that they're going to be a lot of people continuing to get outside and recreate. That's been the positive. People are enjoying our natural resources. So we think another season of increased sales on turkey licenses is probable, and that's a great thing for all of us and for habitat. There will be more hunters in the woods, though, which means safety is really important. So I don't know, Dan, do you have any advice for people who are looking to get out for the first time and wondering about how to do it and how to be safe?
Yeah, a big thing in all turkey, all hunters should, whenever you're using a shotgun, but you should pattern your shotgun so you know your lethal range is going to be at this point. And then always be aware of your surroundings. And you may be on a field, but you really got to be astute as a turkey hunter. You may be calling, and then you may be hearing other hen calls further away, which is your primary turkey call. Try to make sure that that's an actual turkey and not another hunter, and you're not coming at each other. There is turkey gobble calls on the market that can be used in certain situations, but it can also, if you're gobbling at turkeys, you may be directing other hunters to come your way. So pattern your shotgun, know your surroundings, especially on, you know, public land coming up, because there is a lot more turkey hunters out there. Don't take the sound shots. Don't shoot through brush. Make sure you got a really clear shot, and make really sure, like as you're sitting there waiting for the birds to come in, analyze that field so you know what the backdrop is going to be behind them. Because part of your turkey is going to absorb some of your shot, but those pellets are going to carry on and go back behind it. So make sure you're clear of houses. Make sure you know if you're in a farm situation, agriculture. So it's kind of the basic fundamentals of shooting. You know your target and beyond, and know what your equipment can perform and how it's going to do it.
That's great. Yeah, and I've got 3 young kids, and 2 of them I've put through hunter's education, and I sat through it with them. And even though it seems very redundant, there's really important information in there. So if you're getting started, make sure you pay attention to those videos and look at the resources on your state's website, DNR website. Really helpful. So Dan, how about anything new coming?
Yeah, we have a couple new loads coming out this year. Main catalog, we have a 7 and 9 combo shot turkey load, 12-gauge 3-inch. We'd offered a 20-gauge and a 3.5-inch really heavy load, and we wanted to kind of round out our lineup with that. And a couple of real exciting offerings is in our custom shop. And we load a lot of TSS out of our custom shop, smaller runs, you know, literally hand loaded. And we're using that as kind of a vetting ground to say we might not have full retail appeal. We might not need to make enough to ship across country, but there is people looking for it. So we have a 20-gauge, 1¾-inch, number 9 shot coming out of the custom shop. And that is 634 pellets in a 20-gauge. So you're getting 12-gauge full on performance out of your 20. It's going to choke really tight. And then we have a full 2-ounce number 9 shot in a 12-gauge as well.
That's great. Thanks, Dan. Up next, our news and notes section of the It's Federal Season podcast. We'll share what's making headlines at Federal, including hot promotions on Federal gear and product.
There's a time and a place for every season. This is that time, and these are those special places. When preparation gives way to anticipation, rituals, and traditions. Friends, family, forever. This is what you live for. It's time to celebrate the annual tradition like no other. It's Federal Season.
Welcome back to It's Federal Season and the News and Notes segment.
The Federal website is a great resource for up-to-date promotions. So go to federalpremium.com/promotions for all the details on this and all current rebates and promotions from Federal Ammunition. One of the great promotions running right now is our Save and Strut rebate offering. Buy any Federal Premium Turkey Shot Shell Ammunition to get up to a $20 rebate. Choose to keep the rebate or donate it to the Wild Turkey Federation, the NWTF. If you donate that rebate as a thank you bonus, earn a free OnX Hunt 1-month premium membership redemption code when you elect to donate a minimum of $6 or more. The promotion opened up on February 1st and runs through May 31st of 2021. Some exclusions apply. Our next podcast is set for release in May.
If you like the It's Federal Season podcast, be sure to let us know by filling out a rating and review on iTunes. And remember, for us, it's always in season. It's Federal Season.